Hi, I'm Kieran. I'm a youth leader downstairs. I'm currently 20 years old, turned 20 2 months ago. Yeah, generally you would find me down the back in Aaron's seat. He's another person who's not young, who's doing the service, like helping with the service. My apologies, didn't think about that one before I said it. Sorry. I have actually preached before. I preached about this time last year. Does anyone who is here happen to remember the metaphor that I used?
It was about a playground.
It was. Brilliant. Well done. Yeah, and the slide, and it had, and the slide had definitely had steps. Yeah. Yeah. Some people weren't here. That's all right. Anyway, flashback to Easter camp of 2016. It was like a pretty good time, but like everybody had moved all the chairs back to the sides of the room. Everyone's in the middle of the room, right? And praising God and whatever. And God really like put something on my heart. It wasn't really him talking to me because it's something that I was saying, but it was like something that he really put on me. And it was three words repeated three times. It was just, here I am, here I am, here I am, right? And it was like super cool. And I was like, this amazing. It's like something that really hit me, I guess. And it was a real cool experience. And I'm like, God, use me. I'm like, here I am. And then went home and it's school and life and all sorts of things and nothing really happens as it goes. But then flash forward to CYC, which is Central Youth Conference of this year, which was in August. I was going into it not in the greatest place. I was kind of really stressed with uni and things, as youth tend to be. Just stressed about life and stuff. So I wasn't in a terrible place, but I certainly wasn't in a great place. So anyway, I'm like sitting at the back. I was on the tech team, so I was doing the words for the screen and things. So I'm like sitting at the back and I'm in like a camp mood, but not like a God mood, you know? I mean, seeing all my friends and stuff, but it's just like being at a camp. It wasn't really a God mood. So the preacher was a dude named John O'Bell, who I don't really know. Seemed like a decent guy, gave a pretty decent sermon. I thought it was all right. But anyway, he gave this metaphor. And it goes like this, because there's a guy, and he's got his two pots, and one pot's like a perfectly good pot, right? It holds all the water and stuff. And the other pot's like a broken pot, and it's cracked and stuff, and it leaks a bit. And he has to walk for like an hour to get his water. Maybe it's to like a well that was like built by the Salvation Army from the South Nile Peel. Yeah, so he has to pick up his water and put the pots on like the bar thing across his back and balance the two pots and walk all the way back to his house, our journey or whatever. And so he has like his two pots and this pot's like leaking water because it's like got a crack in it, right? So it's leaking water and the pot says to him, like, why do you keep using me? Because I'm like a broken pot. The other pot holds all the water and gets the water safely back. But this pot's like leaking all its water. And the pot says to him, like, why do you keep using me? And he's like, well, you might be broken, but you still have value. Yeah. There's like, you've watered all the plants along that side of the road that he was walking down. Yeah. All those plants are watered and growing. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Yeah. But that metaphor sucks. Because it does, right? Because I'm sitting down the back and I'm at the tech team, like sitting at the back and I'm going, this metaphor isn't particularly great because like if you have two pots and they're balancing on a beam and this one's full of water and this one's half empty, it's gonna tip out, right? But that's who I am. I overthink things. So like this metaphor isn't like particularly great and like the pot's talking to him. So you could say that the guy's a crackpot. I thought of that joke while I was sitting down the back and I obviously wasn't sitting with the youth and I was like, man, that joke's the best joke I'm ever going to make and I've got no one to tell it to. But had to bring it up at the when I figured out that I was doing this for the sermon. But anyway, I go home and I'm lying in my bed and I'm thinking about this metaphor and I can't stop thinking about it because it's like the metaphor isn't great because if you're walking for an hour and your pot only ends up half empty of water, then each step over your hour-long journey has only dropped like one droplet of water because it's only got to half empty over your hour-long walk. So you haven't like watered much of this path because there's only a drop coming out each like step. But the whole point that I'm getting to here is the fact that the metaphor stuck with me was because the metaphor was broken. The metaphor's about the pot being broken still having value.
Yeah.
And the metaphor itself was broken, which is why it stuck with me and had value to me. Because that was like the thing that I brought up in the like youth time on the following day of like, what did you get out of the sermon? I was like, it was that metaphor. It was like actually kind of cool, even though it didn't work. It was actually, it in itself was a metaphor, right? How many sermons have you guys heard over like the time that you've been a Christian? Maybe it's only one, and if that's the case, I apologize. Sorry, didn't, it's all right. Maybe it's tens, maybe it's hundreds. I calculated how many weeks it would have to be to be 1,000, and it's 19 years to like 19 years of Sundays to get to a church, to get to 1,000 sermons. I calculated 10,000 and it's 191 years, so nobody's probably got there yet. So yeah, you might have heard like hundreds of sermons, but how many metaphors or things did you actually take away from it? Because like I've certainly heard a lot and I can think of maybe a handful that I can actually remember. But this one stuck to, like the metaphor stuck to me because it was broken and therefore it had value. Yeah, so anyway, the Sunday after CYC is the Friday and the Saturday, go to the Sunday, went to church, hung out with youth, we went to Reduce to Clear and Pro Raw. It was a pretty good time. necessary information, I know. we did, so we went. Yeah, we went to Kmart, it was great. But anyway, after a weekend of doing stuff on the tech team and like focusing and then going out with youth, I was like pretty tired, right? So I crashed on my bed and I get out my phone, obviously. And it's what you do, obviously. And then, you know how when you swipe across on your iPhone, you get to like the page with like the news and like the weather and all those things? Yeah. So I swiped across to that and on the like YouVersion Bible app, it lets you put the verse of the day on there. See, getting my gold spot in. You can't force me to do it now. But you can put you can put the verse of the day there, right? And I'm almost never look at it. I certainly hadn't then. And England were playing Wales in the rugby, and it was the game that was like, if Wales win, they end up being number one in the world. And they ended up doing it anyway, but they didn't win that game. But I went to click on the thing that's like the live score for that, and I accidentally clicked on the verse of the day, and I hadn't read it, and it's coming up, and I go to click off of it, right? And then I'm like, nah, actually, I'll wait and see what it is. And you know how when you're looking at like a clock, and like the second hand is taking forever to move? The app's just taking forever to load, and I'm tired, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. Anyway, the verse that comes up is Isaiah 6, verse 8, and I intentionally didn't get any slides, and I didn't write it down so that you would all have time to bring out your phones. And anyway, there we are. Everybody's finally getting their thing out. 6, verse 8. Was the verse of the day, which is, then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And I said, here I am, send me. Yeah. And I saw the here I am, yeah. And I'm like, yep. Except I didn't, because I was lying in my bed, so I couldn't take those steps backwards. But But I was like, that's my thing. That's like the thing that got, yeah, exactly. I was like, man, that's so cool. And I was like, okay, we got to like look at the wider verse to get all the context. So now I'm going to read you the entirety of Isaiah 6 because that's what you're supposed to do in a sermon, right? All right. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they called to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and threshold shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried. "I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." He said, "Go and tell this people, be ever hearing but never understanding, be ever seeing but never perceiving. Make the heart of this people calloused, make their ears dull and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed." Then I said, "For how long, Lord?" And he answered, "Until the cities lie ruined and without inhabitant, until the houses are left deserted and the fields ruined and ravaged, until the Lord has sent everyone far away and the land is utterly forsaken. And though a tenth remains in the land, it will again be laid waste. But as the terebinth and oak leave stumps when they are cut down, so the holy seed will be the stump in the land." And so I read that and I go, "Nah, don't like that. That's not what I wanted at all." That's the first bit, dude's all like, "Woe is me, everything's bad." And then in the end bit, it's like, "And everything will be laid waste for like ever. And then the last tenth will be laid waste as well." I'm like, I don't like that one. And then I'm like, I'll go back to the bit that I liked. So I go back to verse eight. And then I read it again, and I read it closely. And if you like read the NIV version closely, it says, "And I said, here am I." That's not my bit. That's "here I am." It's not "here am I." It doesn't work. But me being me, I needed to like get context and understand what that actually meant. So I go to Google it, and of course, instinctively, I swipe across on my phone, and it's England versus Wales live updates, and I'm like, click on that one. So England had 21 points and Wales had 7, so I'm like, great. Then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in the middle of a goal moment. I should probably go back to that. So that was good time. So I Google the passage, and I look at like all the information, and I believe you used to have like massive books that you like went through to figure commentaries. Out commentaries. That I was trying to think of the word, and I wasn't professional enough to Google the like what that word was, but commentaries. But now you can just use Google, and it's far easier, yeah. And I don't have to look through a book. So anyway, this is like kind of the bit that the information that I found about this passage. So King Uzziah was a pretty good king. He's like, apparently he had a pretty good reign. His like, he strengthened Israel and he like spread their influence to the entrance of Egypt. Not into Egypt, but to the entrance of it. So, and then he died by burning incense in the temple of the Lord and he wasn't supposed to. And then he got leprosy and he got cast out and then he died. So the start of it saying in the year that King Uzziah died, that's like got a pretty big amount of weight behind it. It's a good king, right, who like has passed away in this year. So that actually has quite a bit of weight behind it. And then it continues I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne. And the page that I found specifically pulled out the word throne. It's like not a chair, it's a throne. Like when you read it just to yourself, it says throne, you move on. but like the language is very specific. It's referring to throne. It's not saying chair. It's high and exalted, seated on a throne. So I thought that was pretty cool. And this is also the only passage in the Bible where these things are called seraphim. They're called cherubim in other places and things, but this is the only place that they're called seraphim. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then it says the whole, and they were calling to one another. They're in the presence of the Lord, but they're not, these are essentially angels, right? But they're not good enough to be calling out to the Lord. They're calling out to one another, exalting him, calling, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." And they use the word holy three times. And the reason they do that is to give importance to something. If something's repeated, obviously it's got importance behind it. It means something. And yeah, there's like weight behind this. They're using holy, holy, holy. One isn't enough. They used three. It's also like a subtle reference to the Trinity. It's like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Holy, holy, holy. There's like more weight behind it. And then there's the, at the sound of the voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. I thought it was interesting that it specifically refers to the doorposts and thresholds, because in an earthquake, which things are shaking, you go to the doorposts, you go to the threshold, that's where you stand under. I think you're supposed to get under a table now, yeah. But that's certainly how it used to be. You get under the doorpost. Mm-hmm. But this is specifically referring to the doorpost and threshold shook, which just shows how, like, how important, how holy these angels calling out were, let alone God, right? They're not even calling out to God. And Isaiah's response to this is the whole, "Woe is me, I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the Lord Almighty." He doesn't compare to even these seraphim. He doesn't compare to God. He's not even close. Like, he's done pretty well. He's got a book in the Bible named after him. He's clearly done at least decently well. But he's still not even comparable to God. He's in front of God and he's like, "Woe is me, I'm ruined." Yeah. And then it has this whole, "And then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar." A literal angel is using tongs for this live coal. It's not just some like ember. It's hot, presumably. But we don't hear Isaiah, and he touches it to his lips, right? And then says he's cleansed and his sins atoned for. We don't hear Isaiah crying out in pain. We don't get an, "Ow, that hurt." It just continues, right? So the presence of God was so overwhelming that he didn't even feel the pain of this hot coal that even a literal angel is using tongs for. And then it comes to the, "And then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who shall go for us?" And it's interesting that it says, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" It's a singular and then a plural, which I just thought was like, that's pretty impressive. It's another reference to the Trinity, right? And then it's the "here," and I said, "Here am I, send me." It's not, "I will go." It's "send me." It's him putting himself in a position where he wants to be sent, but he's not doing it through his own power. He's doing it through the power of God. It's not directed by us, it's directed by God. And then notice that the very next line is, he said, "Go," right? If we're asking to be sent, if we're going, here I am, send me, we should expect God to say go, where it's very easy to just be like, here I am on a Sunday or at a camp or whatever, and just be like, here I am, and then go home and go back to school or whatever, right? Hang on a minute. It's very much like the here am I. Like, he's telling us to go, so we should go. And the trouble is that often we don't. Like, life isn't easy, and the very next bit of this very much shows that life isn't easy. Be ever hearing, but never understanding. Be ever, like, he said, go and tell this people. Go and tell people that they are going to be ever hearing, but never understanding. Ever seeing but never perceiving, make the hearts of this people calloused, make their ears dull and close their eyes. Like, life isn't easy. Just because we've come to God, it doesn't mean that we're just going to get a free pass of, like, we're going to have life, everything sorted, nothing will go wrong. Life kind of sucks. It's not wrong. It's like, only through God can we do what... Yeah. But it does say otherwise. It does say otherwise they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed. This is within God's realm of possibility. It's just not what he's doing at this current moment. It's not part of his plan currently. And then Isaiah's response to this is, then I said, for how long, Lord? And I'm like, damn right, how long? Right? This guy's a prophet, and he's like essentially being told that his preaching is going to do literal nothing. And his response is, how long? And God answers, until the cities lie ruined. Good start. Cool. All right. Until the cities lie ruined and without inhabitant, until the houses are left deserted and the fields ruined and ravaged, until the Lord has sent everyone far away and the land is utterly forsaken. So it's like, this isn't a great prophecy kind of thing to have told to you. It's like, gee, thanks. Really like that one. But it finishes with, and though a tenth remains in the land. So it's like, perfect, great, there is hope. It will again be laid waste. Great. Well, it's just like blow on, blow on, blow, right? But it does finish with, as the terebinth and oak leave stumps when they are cut down, so the holy seed will be the stump in the land. There is still hope, even though the last tenth has been like ruined. Yeah. There's still stuff left. There's still, even in its brokenness, it still has value. I thought it was real cool. And Isaiah still has value, even though, like, he cried out that he was sinful before, right? He still has value. He still has something to bring. And that's something that I certainly struggled with. I was like, what do you mean I have value? Like, I'm not fixed. I'm not mended. I'm not perfect. I still sin, like, all the time. It's, like, kind of difficult. How can I be a youth leader if I'm being bad? How can I present a sermon to you people if I'm, like, not fixed, not perfect? And there's the Bible verse in Matthew 7, verse 3, which I have to go find. So you will have to go find it as well. You don't have to. I am going to read it. Matthew 7, verse 3. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And that's obviously about like judging and not being judgmental toward other people when you've got problems yourself. But I always kind of took it as the whole like, I'm not fixed, so I need to fix myself first. I've got to remove the plank from my own eye before I can help other people. Like, it has that kind of connotation, but it doesn't intend to, but you can take it that way. And I did, and it wasn't particularly helpful, right? Like, what right do I have to help others if I've, like, got my own problems? And I think a lot of people struggle with this. When I floated this idea to the group as like what I was doing for my sermon, Ruben was like sagely nodding along, and Georgia was like, yeah, I struggle with this, like, got to be perfect for doing the kids downstairs. And Rick gave me this like pearl of a idea when he was like, I struggle with this as well, was the whole it's not all about us, right? We might feel that we're broken and be like the pot and be like, I'm broken, why are you still using me? But it's not about us. It's about the value that we do have. It's about God. Like, we can still each make incredibly valuable contributions. God isn't going to put us in a situation where we can't have value. And yeah, he isn't going to put us in a position where we can't give something, where we can't help people, where we can't provide things. And he can use us like in our brokenness, but he can also use us through our brokenness, through the cracks that we have. Hopefully it's something other than blood that's pouring out of us through our cracks. But hopefully it's something that will plant, will grow the seeds in the people that we interact with as we walk past them on our path, that hopefully we can provide value to some, to people that we don't have. And I'll ask the music team back up. But yeah, God puts us in a position where we can have value even though we're broken. He puts us in a position where we are able to provide something to the world, even though we're broken pots, broken metaphors. We're not perfect, but we don't actually need to be perfect to provide something. Doesn't mean you can just like sit back and not worry about your problems, but you can actually keep moving forward and helping people without having to be perfect first. Thank you very much.
Yes. I just feel that it's the right moment for me just to say here that was an awesome word. Awesome, awesome word. And I loved the way you taught it. You made the scriptures come alive. But more than that, you made me feel that it was okay to be a cracked pot. Okay? So I read a book years ago called God Uses Cracked Pots. And I've hung on to that ever since, because Kieran is right here. We all have holes. We all have stuff in life. But it's actually how we want to deal with it and how God deals with us in those moments. So I want to encourage you this morning that that word has become alive to us. But actually now it's up to us to do something with that word. And I want to encourage you this morning to think about your life and where you are at with God. And does God have all of you? Because when you say, here I am, and just so you know, the New Living Translation says, here I am, those exact words, what's your response this morning? So as we sing, I want to encourage you to think about that. I want you to think about the influence that you can have, because no one is perfect. Because far out, if someone was perfect here, you know, like, I want to meet you, because none of us are perfect. We all are cracked pots. Sorry about that, but you're all a bunch of cracked pots. But God is using us as we open ourselves up to Him to allow His love to flow through us. So I want to encourage you this morning, but I also want to offer that opportunity that if you want someone to pray with you, then now is this the moment that you might want to come and just ask for prayer this morning to help you to walk the journey that God calls you to day by day. God bless you.